Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging out with me. I'm Jim Blasingame. And you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show, and I'm glad you're here. I'm very excited that we've got another great member, original founding member of our Brain Trust, back on the show this week. As we've been doing all week long, we've been inviting back the originals. Today, all four people on the show are original members, including our good buddy Bert Folsom, Dr. Burton W. Folsom Jr., who is the author of Empire Builders, also the author of the brand new landmark book, New Deal or Raw Deal, but the brand spanking new book that's going to become a landmark book. It's just too much of a baby yet to be able to call it that, is Bert's new book that he co-authored with his wife, Anita, FDR Goes to War. Bert Folsom, welcome back.
Well, Jim, it's good to be back with you.
The resident historian, folks, the original resident historian of the Brain Trust. I anointed you that with that title, Bert, back in 98, but you seem to think you were with me in 97, and I'm going to have to go back and check my records on that.
It's possible. I'm not sure on that, Jim, but the article that we discussed was in 97, but it could have been in 98, but I'm really proud to be the resident historian.
You are the resident historian, and you know, and I remember what we talked about, because it was minimum wage, because that was one of those things that always stuck in my craw. And you educated us. You told us about the history of minimum wage and explained to us that minimum wage wasn't some desire to be fair to the working class. It was a political ploy to prevent Southern textile companies from competing with Michigan textile companies. I mean Massachusetts textile companies.
No, you're right, Jim. And the nice thing was I had not written the book New Deal or Raw Deal, then. Of course, it goes back to Franklin Roosevelt,
to
1938.
30s. Yeah.
But I was able to, of course, incorporate that in the book. So we were talking about things that became parts of that book 10 years later. And yes, it was an effort by Massachusetts textile owners to prevent Southerners from getting textiles.
It was not for the masses, folks. It was a restraint of trade political ploy.
Yeah, absolutely, and to prevent the South from expanding and the textile industry from shifting to the South.
Mm-hmm. And now it's gotten out of hand, and you know, and people wonder why, you know, America has so many unemployed people, and that's just the minimum wage is one of the reasons why there are so many unemployed people, aren't there?
Well,
it's more complicated than that, but that's one of the elements.
It's one of the elements, and during the Great Depression. The Great Depression was extended because of the minimum wage. We had an uptick in unemployment in 1938, and the minimum wage is part of that.
Right.
Union activity was another part, but it's unfortunate we had a 10-year period of very high unemployment, and I hope we don't repeat that, Jim.
Well, and you know, one of the highest groups of unemployed are the young people.
Yes.
Especially minority young people. And we need our young people to get some dirt under their fingernails, to learn how to work for you know, maybe bring home a little less than they think they're worth, so they don't think that they're worth so much. And you know, we need young people to pay their dues, just like every other generation has paid their dues in the marketplace, and they don't need to wait till they're 25 to do that.
Well, a lot of people, as you know, who are young, just they cannot add much value to the company. And so the best move on both sides is to have the employer pay them a small wage, what they are worth, and then they can sort of get some experience, and then they'll be worth a lot more later.
Well, and look at what has happened. See, for generations, Bert, companies weren't able to do anything about the minimum wage. They didn't have any way around it. But now we have something called kiosks at the grocery store.
Right.
Right? Technology, yep. Human ingenuity, and resulting in technology, has given businesses a way around the minimum wage thing, which is where, you know, 20 years ago you would still have had to have hired a high school or a college person to check people out and bag their groceries. Now you don't have to do that.
Every time you make a raise in the minimum wage, it gives various employers incentives to try to move to technology for much of their business, because that way you can, of course, save costs. And the shame of it is those are opportunities, those low-income jobs, granted, but opportunities for people to get a start in the marketplace.
And let's be honest about something else. Every continued increase in minimum wage has been no different from the original purpose, and that is for political reasons, and for the political advantage of unions, and for the populist advantage of certain politicians. That's all it serves. It actually hurts. The research shows it hurts the people who it supposedly is supposed to help.
It does. Because a lot of those people never end up with jobs. A lot of them end up with dead-end jobs. So it's not been something that's been good for the economy, but politicians think it sounds very good to say, we're going to make sure you get more money. Of course, then they get laid off, and then the politician will blame the businessman. So,
and the only thing worse than a minimum wage discussion or initiative is the living wage initiative, right?
Well, that's even worse. That's even fuzzier, isn't it, Jim?
Yeah, the living wage. You know what, Bert? I'd like to have a living wage. I'm a small business. You know how many? There are 28 million small business owners in America, Bert, who would love to have a living wage.
What's amazing is, you know, Jim, and so many of your listeners know, is that people who are in small business often have virtually no wage, and they're working twice as many hours. In World War II, one of the things I discovered in the book FDR Goes to War that Anita and I did was Andrew Higgins, who was a boat builder. You know,
right.
Those Higgins boats that Eisenhower said won the war.
Mm-hmm.
He had virtually no wages early years. He was working practically 8 to 16 hours a day.
Non-small business owners would be amazed, Bert, when they see a small business owner driving down the street in a nice car, you know, with an established business, seemingly successful, they would be amazed to determine that all those things I just said are true about that person, but this particular month, that person didn't take a paycheck because the cash flow wasn't there. That happens all the time, even among successful small business owners. 20 after, I should say. I'm Jim Blassingame, celebrating 14 years with our good friend, Bert Folsom. Stay with us.
Mama, it's grapefruit wine.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.